Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, hour number two of the show. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for our program, Harriet Williams and Martha Deal. Henry Frain is at the controls. We are happy to have here back on our show as our guest, our chief meteorologist, Ed Kieser. From time to time, he's been here on the program, and I think we try to do it at least a couple of times a year in advance of winter and in advance of severe weather season to give people who are listening the opportunity to maybe ask questions. Maybe they have some questions about how storms form, how they're tracked, how people like Ed go about trying to figure out what the weather's going to do. Maybe there are things that confuse you about the various watches and warnings that we give. That's what we thought we'd try to do this morning, as we are certainly into that time when we can have severe thunderstorms and tornadoes. Questions are welcome. I also just want to make sure people know this is not like the talk to. So please don't call in and say, I'm going to Phoenix next weekend. Can you tell me what the weather is like? That's not what we're doing here on this program. But it is an opportunity to ask questions about weather and how it works, and questions that would take maybe a minute or two to answer. And I know that Ed will do his best to help you out. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and toll-free 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. Any point here, you can give us a call and we'd be very happy to talk with you. Hey, thanks very much for being here.
Well, it's good to be here.
I was just looking here at some wind speeds that I get from the Weather Service from yesterday, of some pretty impressive wind speeds here. A lot of places where they clocked at least gusts that were over 50 miles an hour. Apparently at Willard, they had a 62 mile an hour gust. Now, here's one I don't believe, though. I'm not so sure about it. Lawrenceville, 91 miles an hour. Could that really be?
It could really be, and they had a lot of damage down that way, too. So, the wind gusts were quite extreme. There was a wind advisory in effect yesterday, although that probably got hidden for many behind the tornado watch and the severe thunderstorm and tornado warnings across the area. But we did have a wind advisory, a fairly strong storm system moving across the Midwest yesterday. So once the storms rolled through, we got on the backside with the very strong winds.
Yeah. So that's – and I guess that's good, because it does help remind people that high winds can cause a lot of damage, and certainly a – you know, we talk a lot about tornadoes and the kind of damage that they can cause. But in a severe thunderstorm, you can have high winds, and straight-line winds can – indeed cause a lot of damage. So people shouldn't say, well, thunderstorm not so bad as tornado.
Well, some of the straight line winds in thunderstorms in extreme cases are over 100 miles per hour, which is stronger than many tornadoes. So it doesn't have to be a tornado solely that can cause damage or destroy a house. I know a lot of people, after they've had damage, want to be able to say it was a tornado. But a lot of times the straight line winds that accompany a severe thunderstorm are every bit as powerful, if not more so, than your average tornado. And your average tornado is considered weak, with wind speeds of a little less than 100 miles per hour. So straight-line winds with severe thunderstorms are nothing to ignore.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you would know this offhand. At Willard, what was the peak, the highest wind gust ever recorded?
I don't know that.
Don't know.
I don't know that for sure. But you know, in this area, a lot of places at some point have had an 80 or 90 mile per hour wind gust. So that 91 at Lawrenceville, while extreme, is not out of the question. But my memory of Willard, and I don't have the all time record book for the airport, but over 70 I can remember. But beyond that,
yeah, okay. Well, one thing that when we do the show at this time of year, I guess either time of year, one of the things I kind of encourage you to talk about a little bit is, what are the major factors that influence the weather, and why is it that we're now in a time when things are changing? What's going on to produce this kind of volatility that gives us severe thunderstorms and tornadoes?
Well, the transition seasons between winter and spring, winter and summer, which would be spring, and then summer and winter, which is fall, you tend to have more volatility as far as up and down in temperature. We're closer to that extreme in temperature difference between the tropical air that's always lurking to the south and the cold polar air to the north. And so the jet stream winds are usually nearby those seasons, and in the winter too. But the winter, sometimes the jet stream goes south of us and we're just cold. During the summer, the temperature extreme from the tropical areas to the poles is much less because the poles during the summer are getting 24 hours of daylight, whereas right now and for the last 5 months or so, the North Pole has had a 24-hour night every day. So it's essentially they haven't seen the sun there for over 5 months at the North Pole. Sun's about to rise there. They're probably already starting to see twilight. That is, if anybody was actually there. Mm-hmm. So when you get into the spring, the warmer air starts to come northward. So we get closer to the borderline between the very warm air that always exists in the tropics and the much colder air that's been able to gather over the polar region over the entire year. So the jet stream winds are strong, and that helps power the storms. As far as severe weather goes, the other factor is the atmosphere needs to be unstable, and that means warm air near the ground rises effectively because it's cold aloft. And you have that extreme to be much more likely in the spring than in the fall, because right now as we're going into spring, the days are getting longer and the sun angle is higher. So the sun more effectively heats the ground in the spring, whereas even though in the fall you have that clash of air masses again, the days are short and the sun is low, so the sun doesn't heat the ground as well, so the ground or the air just above the ground is usually not as unstable as in the spring. So when you combine that all together, the springtime is when we have the most severe weather. And while it can occur at any time of year, late March through April, May, and June seems to be our peak season, but on occasion, we get severe storms on through the rest of the summer as well. But but we're going into the peak season for tornadoes and severe thunderstorms. From mid to late March on through June is prime time across this part of the country.
Yeah. And it seems like it, and that, and it, I suppose it has something to do with this, the heating that occurs through the day, that maybe the peak time for thunderstorms starts to be at about maybe 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, of course, they can happen in the middle of the night. It does happen. They can happen early in the morning. We certainly see that. But it seems that mostly the time when we see this weather really erupt, it's in the, say, the middle of the afternoon after things have gotten a chance to warm up through the course of the day.
Well, that's exactly right. The sun is highest in the sky, and you get your most solar radiation in at what we call local noon, the halfway point between sunrise and sunset, which is approximately noon standard time, approximately 1 p.m. daylight time. And I say approximately because the middle part of the day actually wobbles by about a half an hour during the course of the year. And also it depends on what part of the time zone you're in. Local noon for those in western Indiana occurs much later than noon Eastern Standard Time or 1 p.m. Eastern Daylight Saving Time, because those folks are on the western edge of the time zone. And of course, those in eastern Illinois are on the eastern part of the central time zone. So at times that local noon may be slightly earlier, although the time zones kind of migrated west a little bit for political reasons. So right now, our midpoint of the day is about 1 p.m., and that's when you receive the most solar radiation. But the sun, even though it's not at its highest after 1 p.m., is still pretty high up, so it continues to heat the ground. And our maximum temperature during the spring is around 3:30 in the afternoon, and that gets a little later as we head toward late spring and early summer. As the days are longer, it could be as late as 5 p.m. So, as you noted, that seems to be the time of day when the thunderstorms are most likely to erupt, and we do have more severe weather during the late afternoon and evening than any other time of the day or night. But as you also noted, and you've observed from living here many years and doing this show several years in a row now, thunderstorms can occur at any time of the day or night and be severe.
Yeah, and certainly tornadoes can happen in the night, and that's why one of the reasons that you guys and a lot of other people in the weather business really suggest to people that if you really want to be safe and want to be aware of weather conditions, that you get a weather radio and you have it there in your bedroom so that if a tornado is approaching you when you're asleep in the middle of the night, it's going to go off and give you a warning.
Yeah, and if you don't want to get alerted for every county in the weather radio's territory, for example, for Champaign County, WXJ76, operating at a frequency of 162.55 megahertz, covers 9 counties. So that means any watch or warning for a 9-county area will activate the tone alert, which would wake you up if you have just a standard weather radio. So if you really only want to wake up for, say, Champaign County, or if you live in Piatt County and you only want to be awakened for warnings and watches in Piatt County, you want to make sure you spend a few more dollars and get what's called a SAME weather radio. SAME is specific area message encoding. And that way you can program your radio to your county so you only get warnings for your county and only wake up if it's in your neck of the woods and not just anywhere in a large 9-county area of central Illinois. And you can go online to find out more about that type of radio, weather.gov, and then look for weather radio, NWR. You just do a search and you can find not only that information, but the National Weather Service also provides a listing of code numbers for every county in the U.S. So you can plug in the county you want your radio to work for. And if you move somewhere else later, you just reprogram the radio. It's good throughout the United States.
Very good. Our guest this morning is our chief meteorologist, Ed DeKeyser. And if you have questions about severe weather, or generally, I guess we could take questions about weather, you can call in 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. If you are, you know, when people watch weather broadcasters on television, one of the things that no doubt at some point you're going to see is a weather map that shows temperatures across the country.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're looking at that map and you see that there's a certain point where on you could almost draw a line where on one side temperatures were much cooler and on the other side temperatures were much warmer, where you see there's a dramatic difference in temperature. Can you figure that along that line that you would draw between where it's cooler and where it's warmer, there's going to be storm activity where the cooler and the warmer air come together?
Often there's going to be clouds and the likelihood of precipitation in that area, but not always. It depends on a lot of details, the upper air wind flow, the jet stream above that temperature difference, which often the jet stream's nearby when there's that big of a temperature difference. But whether there's big storms or not, it depends on several factors, whether there's enough instability in the atmosphere, maybe just how strong the jet stream is above that, and so on. But usually when you have that big temperature contrast, you'll have at least some clouds and precipitation because that does signify there's a weather front there.
Okay. Well, let's talk with some other folks here. We have a number of callers, and we'll start with someone in Champaign, and they are on line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
When I talked to Ed at the open house, I mentioned to him something about when he talks about the atmosphere getting energy for thunderstorms. And what I mentioned was something that the meteorologists call convective available potential energy. And he said that was one of the things he talks about. But I decided to work through the mathematics. As I recall, it's measured in a unit called joules per kilogram, which is the number of the amount of energy per unit mass of air.
Mm-hmm.
And if I worked through all the energy conversions, what I came up with was that every 10 square miles or so, the atmosphere has, when thunderstorm potential becomes greater, the atmosphere has the same amount of thunderstorm creating potential energy as is released by a nuclear bomb. Does that sound about right to you?
Yeah, that sounds about right. The energy or the atmosphere, I don't have all the wow numbers memorized or in front of me, but that does sound about right. And I've heard comparisons to hurricanes, which are clusters of thunderstorms, and just the sheer power they have compared to bombs and all of that. And yeah, that does sound about right. There's a lot of power in thunderstorms.
Okay, and do we have a tornado seminar scheduled yet?
No, and we may not.
Okay.
Yeah, that's just something that I'm still working through right now. Budget's tight this year. That's all I'll say right now.
Okay, well, thank you anyway. We've enjoyed them in the past.
Thanks.
We'll talk next with someone in Cisco, and this is our toll-free line, line four. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. Two quick questions. If a tornado is on its way, do you want to crack your windows or not? And then the second question is our basement under the stairwell the safest place in the house? And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Well, thank you for those two questions, because those are two things worthy of discussion. First of all, don't worry about the windows. Spend all your time that you have, and often it's not a lot of time, taking cover. Opening your windows, that will not save your house at all, but if you're by the window, that could put you at risk of being hit by flying debris. So ignore the windows. That's something that was taught back in the 1960s, and still, it's amazing how bad advice during one era still persist decades later. And the theory was back in the day, back in the 60s, was that houses exploded when a tornado came overhead, and therefore if you open the windows, it would equalize pressure. But the fact is, if a tornado comes overhead and it was strong enough that you would have that pressure difference, the wind is going to be strong enough to knock the house apart. And more people are killed and injured by flying debris than anything else. So ignoring the windows is a good idea. That's the first thing. As far as the safest place in a house, if you have a basement and you can get in the under the staircase in the basement, that is a place we recommend people go. The bottom line there is you want to go to the lowest floor possible, so the basement if you have one. And then you want to get under something sturdy. So the stairwell is usually pretty sturdy, the way it's wedged in with the wall and the floor. So that's usually a good place to go. You want to get under something sturdy. If you just go to the basement and stand in the middle, you're still subjected to a collapse of the roof above or the ceiling above, or things just being thrown in there. So getting under something sturdy is your added protection. I'm reminded of just being in the basement, not being good, going back a few years to a F4 tornado in Utica near Star Rock State Park. There was, of course, an F4 tornado is pretty strong. It's a violent tornado, in fact. And some people in a tavern went into the basement and were standing there. And unfortunately, the building above collapsed and some people were crushed when the beam came down. Those who were in that part of the basement did not survive. And so getting under something sturdy is something you want to do. So I hope that answers her two questions.
And if there's no option like that, is it better to go into a corner than it is to be standing in the middle?
I'd say, yeah, corner is probably a little better. But if you don't have something very sturdy to put over you, even if you could have a blanket or cloth just to help protect you from flying glass and debris, it won't protect you from something major hitting you. But a lot of what flies around is actually small, just bits of material. But those bits of material can become lethal, or at the very least just cause some serious injuries, because it's just amazing what little innocent things become lethal missiles in tornadic winds.
Yeah, certainly that's why people are urged to stay away from windows, because the broken flying glass can be really nasty.
And on a first floor, if you don't have a basement, you would like to get into a small room if possible, and a small room without windows, so in the center of the building. Now, that could be a closet, that could be a bathroom. Bathrooms usually offer a little better protection. They just with all the pipes, the plumbing, sometimes that just holds the walls together a little better when a tornado is taking apart a building. So something small in the middle of the house is better than being on the outer edges.
Okay. Next caller is Champagne, line number two. Hello.
Yeah, hi. Mm-hmm. What's in terms of on the web, the weather Gov, is that one of the better ones in terms of weather or not?
Yeah, as far as warnings go, the National Weather Service issues the official watches and warnings. So if you go to weather.gov, www.weather.gov, That's the National Weather Service's homepage for the nation. And then they have a U.S. map there, and you just click on that U.S. map for the area you're interested in, say central Illinois, and then that takes you to the local National Weather Service office, which for us is out of Lincoln, Illinois. And they do have a map on that page that updates the warnings and the watches. Just as with any web service, though, if it gets super busy, it may get bogged down a little bit, be slow to load, although I think in the last couple of years it's been a lot more reliable than when they first started that. I think their servers are a bit better now to provide more reliability. But that's one place you can get the official warnings and watches on the web. And another place, it gets a little more complicated to find, but if you search the College of Duke page, which is cod.edu, they have a pretty nice website, too, as far as updating warnings and having information. You find their weather page and then click to the severe part of it. And I sometimes find them to be pretty quick at relaying the information as well.
Okay, so that's for the whole area, because that's up in northern Illinois.
Yeah, the COD page, they'll list warnings for anywhere in the country.
Oh.
They just keep a list going, and so if you're really following all this stuff and you're using the web, having more than one source is always good.
Okay.
But those are two websites I can recommend for during severe weather.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, thank you. Well, other questions are welcome, weather-related questions. Our guest is Ed Kieser. He's the chief meteorologist for WILL. And if you have questions, give us a call, 333-9455 for Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 800-222-9455. I think as many years as we've been doing this, people still say that sometimes they're confused about the difference between a watch and a warning. So maybe we better go over that again, just to make sure people who are listening got the basic idea.
Yeah, and I'm teaching a class this semester in broadcast meteorology, a new class here at the U of I, and we talked about watch and warning last week too. And when that terminology was developed, I don't think the people developing the terms really were thinking by having two words starting with WA. Because it's just an endless confusion.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll put it in perspective as best as possible. A watch means that that type of weather is possible. So that means watch out. That's what I like to say. Watch means watch out. That means pay attention to the weather outside. Watch the sky. And if it starts to get unusually threatening, be ready to take cover. When a watch is issued, you should listen to local media. And that means some people that just have satellite radio or watch satellite-delivered television need to pay attention to local stations. That's one time when local is still going to be more important than anything that you'd be paying attention to, even if you like programs delivered from elsewhere. And be prepared to take shelter. It's a good time to review your safety rules. If a tornado watch is issued, plan on where you would go if a tornado suddenly approaches, because that's the problem with tornadoes. They usually suddenly approach, and you don't have much time to think about it, so you want your actions to be instinctive when a tornado actually is heading in your direction if it does. So a watch means watch out, and usually for tornado watches and severe thunderstorm watches, they're issued for a few dozen counties for a period of around 4 or 5 hours. A severe thunderstorm or tornado warning means that a severe thunderstorm or tornado has actually been sighted. There's actual reports of it, or Doppler radar at the National Weather Service indicates that say for a tornado warning that a tornado is likely to form soon, because Doppler radar can detect rotation within a storm. And usually tornado warnings and severe thunderstorm warnings are now issued for only portions of counties. And So we have more warnings, but for smaller areas, so they're more precise. So pay attention to the list of towns in the path of the storm during a tornado warning or watch. And if you're in or very near one of those towns, you should take cover then. And a warning is a more urgent message saying, okay, it's happening, now you take cover. So a watch means watch out. A warning means take action, take cover. You're being warned that the weather's bad.
Now, generally here, I mean, certainly because of the, and it has to do, I guess, mainly with the prevailing winds. Here in the United States, weather moves from west to east. So you look at, you want to know what's coming your way. Generally, you want to look out at the west.
In general, yes.
So with do tornadoes generally move that way, or can they sort of skip around in unpredictable ways?
Well, tornadoes can come from any direction, but the prevailing direction is in a general west-east. I say general in the early spring, the March-April tornadoes, more often than not, come from the southwest. So looking southwest to west is your typical direction. Around this part of the country, as we get into the mid to late summer, say July and August, more tornadoes tend to come from the northwest, and they are at that time of year we tend to have a little different setup for when we get tornadoes. The Roanoke tornado, the F4 that hit the Parsons manufacturing plant in July of 04, came out of the northwest, for example. The Plainfield tornado in August of 1990, devastating F5 tornado, came out of the northwest. So basically, that whole western quadrant is the direction you want to be looking. And when we're doing severe weather coverage, we often will be mentioned what direction the storms are coming from. And sometimes before the storms even develop, if we know it's going to be a storm day, we'll say, today they'll generally be coming from this direction to give people a heads up. But sometimes tornadoes can turn direction a little bit. So if it looks like it's just going to miss you, still take cover. Or if you're lucky and it looks like it's coming right at you and it turns at the last second, then you're lucky.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk with next with someone in Urbana. Line number one. Hello.
Hello. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Last year at this time, I remember a lot of discussion about whether a bathtub was a safe place to be or not. And difference of opinion among different people, broadcasters and television people and so forth. What's the story on that?
Well, first off, I can't comment on what any other broadcaster says because I don't ever watch them during severe weather. I'm working.
Because you're doing this.
Yes, I'm working, so I don't know what they say. It depends on your situation. A bathtub, I think, is better than a lot of other places on the first floor of your house, but if you have a basement with a good shelter in the basement, that's better than the bathtub on the first floor of your house.
I live in a house on a slab. The only interior room is the bathroom and the closet beside it, which is full of shelving. And so I have always felt that the tub was my haven. So I put down a comforter and I crawl in there and wait for the tornado to be gone.
Well, that's your best option then.
In the bathroom, there is a large vanity mirror on one wall, and across the bathroom from it, on the opposite wall, is a medicine chest with or cabinet with more glass. And so it seemed to me that the tub was a reasonably safe place. But somebody was saying the possibility of electricity traveling down the pipes and in the iron bathtub, that's not a good place and so on. So I just wondered what your take on this was.
Well, if it's a metal bathtub, there's that possibility. But here we're talking about a tornado versus lightning. And sometimes you have to pick what is your greater threat, and it sounds to me that in your house, your particular situation, the bathtub is probably the safest place. Covering yourself with a comforter, too, you know, and just because that will protect you from some flying glass.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time, You know, that will be good for an average tornado. Now, I'm not to scare you or anything, but if you ever got the very rare F4 or F5 or the EF4 now, or EF5 tornado with the wind speeds up around 200 miles per hour, there may be nothing that can protect somebody that's on a slab. But those tornadoes are very rare. Only about 1% of all tornadoes reach that strength. So.
Yeah, well, there really aren't any options in a case like that because you don't want to be outside trying to find someplace else to go either.
No. So
yeah. Okay. Well, I appreciate it very much. Thank
all right.
you.
Well, thank you. We're a little bit past the midpoint here. Again, our guest is Ed Kieser. He's our chief meteorologist for WILL. We're now getting into that time of year when we can have severe thunderstorms and tornadoes. Of course, you could have a tornado anytime. We want to make sure that we say that, but maybe here our frequency, the chances of severe weather, we're getting them to the spring here when it's maybe more likely, and we want to make sure that you know what to do in case a storm is heading your way. If you have other kinds of questions about severe weather, give us a call, and Ed will see if he can answer your question. 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. And let's talk next with someone in Terre Haute. No, I guess not. We'll talk with somebody in St. Joe. How about that? Line number three.
Good
Hello.
Morning.
Yes.
This isn't a storm-related question or comment, but on the television broadcasts of weather, when the screen is up with the projection for the temperatures for the week coming up and the highs and the lows, it has always kind of driven me half nuts that the high is at the top and the low is at the bottom of each day's column, but it seems as though the low that's below the high for the day was really last night's low. Maybe you can tell me if that's true or not. And if it is, that's so counterintuitive for reading a screen. We tend to read from left to right, from up to down, and if the low from last night was not under the high for today, wouldn't that make more sense?
Well, what you are describing is something that drives me nuts, too. So first of all, I just want to, I guess, make sure, I'm going to tell you what we do here at WILL. Your comments with your frustration obviously have to do with what some other stations are presenting. Because first off, we do not put our highs at the top and the lows at the bottom of the screen. We do have the highs higher than the lows, but they're all next to each other on the map. And what we do is we stagger the low and high temperatures. In other words, we put the low to the left of the high so that you can kind of read in that low, high, low, high, low, high, so you know exactly which day the low is referring to. Because
right.
when they do stack up and down, it to me is frustrating because you don't know. Say you have for Tuesday, the low is 35 and the high is 50. Does that 35 mean Tuesday morning, or does that mean Tuesday night into
right.
Wednesday morning? And,
right.
and that is a frustration of mine. I also have you know in the broadcast meteorology class I'm teaching, I've brought that up with my students.
Yay.
Yeah, because I think it's just it's horrible. And I'll tell you how bad it is. I've been to a couple stations where different weathercasters will do it differently. Well, some will say that's Tuesday morning and others will say it's Tuesday night and nobody has any idea what they're looking at. So I fully agree with what you're saying. And here at WILL, we do take that into account on the broadcast on WILL TV. But yeah, just for...
It's software, I'm sure, too.
No, well, yeah, but you can design your graphics. There's ways that basically it's just probably... a lot of times you'll get pre-made backgrounds and the art departments will just have bars for each day. And frankly, a lot of the people that do television weather don't even think about this stuff. They're not meteorologists. They just don't think about this stuff. But I know as a viewer over the years, what you're saying drives me nuts. So I'm fully in your camp.
The other thing that I would share is my favorite weather website for radar and watching storms come in, and it's does a national map, is intellicast.com, intellicast.com. If there are storms approaching, I look at your sites and other sites, but if I want to see the direction that the general front and things are coming from, it kind of helps me see, you know, how soon are things going to get here or where they are. I really like that site. I've used it for years.
Well, it's a good site. IntelliCast is produced by a company called WSI, which happens to be the company we use as our graphics vendor for television. There's really three big companies that supply the raw data and graphic systems for television stations in the country, and WSI is one of them. And you know, I've been happy with them over the years. So yeah, that is a good site for radar. You know, the previous caller, when he was asking about sites, I pointed out the National Weather Service's site for warnings, since they're the official warning site. And really, for tracking weather and getting different weather information, it seems different websites have different specialties or their best points. And so those that are really into the weather look at a lot of different sites.
Yeah. Okay. Well, again, questions are welcome. We have about 15 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. Questions about weather, particularly about severe weather, thunderstorms, tornadoes, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Here's someone to talk with in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hi. I have a question and maybe a suggestion for WILL. I moved here in the summer of 2007, I think it was. And the siren that goes off for the tornadoes, if you're not from here, you're not aware of what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really publicized anywhere as far as I could tell. Like the first time I heard
I agree.
It took me by surprise, and I didn't know what it was. So,
well,
I don't know if the station can, for, I know, like, because most people are from here, they're aware of what it is.
No, a lot of people actually don't know a lot. I'm now that you've brought up this topic, I'm going to talk about the sirens. So is that just, you said you had a comment and a question, or is that?
Yeah, the question is if maybe the station could just on the date or around when it's going to be, just let people know what it is.
Okay. Well, our policy here at WILL, assuming we hear the siren because we're inside a building, we usually do hear it, but we're in a kind of a protected building, is we do interrupt broadcast whenever the sirens go off in the Champaign-Urbana-Savoy area and make mention of what that means. First off, the sirens are tested the first Tuesday of every month at 10 a.m., and we had that last Tuesday. So you will hear the sirens every first Tuesday of the month, unless there's severe weather in the area that day. And they test two types of sirens, and soundings of the same sirens. One has the very long tone, and that's the first one they usually test, and that's the tornado siren. And when that goes off for real, that means take cover because of a tornado. Then they test the up and down siren, and you never want to hear that one for real because that's the nuclear attack siren. So you never want to hear that one for real. Here's the rules that are poorly publicized in the area. There's no all clear siren. When you hear the siren go off, that means there's a threat of a tornado, and that means you should take cover for 30 minutes. That's just the unwritten rule of the outdoor warning sirens in this area. And I'm only speaking for Champaign, Urbana, and Savoy. Sirens are really controlled by local jurisdictions, so another town may have other rules. If the siren goes off again within that 30-minute period, that means you restart the 30-minute clock for taking cover. That means they've seen something else, or the system slowed down sufficiently that they think the threat is going to last more than the original 30 minutes. So if you are in the basement and the sirens go off again, that means stay down there another 30 minutes. And that's what it means. Again, there's no all clear on the sirens here in Champaign, Urbana, and Savoy. And that's what they mean. I sought out that information, so I'm happy to pass it along. But I agree with you, it's not very well publicized. So even people that lived here 20 or 30 years, I bet the majority don't know that. So thank you for your call.
Thanks.
All right, very good. Next, we'll go talk with someone in Indiana, Sanborn, Indiana, line number 4, toll-free line. Hello. Is a caller there on line 4 in Indiana?
Yeah, I'm here. here.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just kind of wondering about, you know, this weather coming up lately, you know, this next couple of days.
Okay.
I was just wondering if it's going to be really rough or whatever. And also, I'm not really a weather phobic kind of like. I always get scared, you know.
Uh-huh.
Whenever I can even just look at it on television just a little bit, and I'm panicky kind of. You don't have any hotline numbers I could call, do you?
I don't have any hotline numbers you can call. I always think when I'm I just try to seek out information whenever I have some concern about something. So if you have the internet, you know, just go to websites. If you don't have the internet, tune into local media and try to get as much information as you can, because odds are the storm is not going to even though there's going to maybe be some bad storms around, the odds are with any given storm system, it's not going to be putting a direct hit on you.
All right.
But we may have some severe thunderstorms in the region late tonight and tomorrow. The details we don't know yet. The system's still evolving, but it does look like there will be the potential for some severe thunderstorms in the area late tonight and tomorrow. And Mike Sola will have an update on the weather at, you're in Indiana, 1:35 p.m. on our station.
Okay. I'm sorry to bother you, though. You know, it's the direct weather station. I mean, question.
Well, it sounds like, though, from what Ed was saying is that, you know, now, probably now, assuming maybe that you have internet or maybe that you have cable television, we probably have more information about weather available than ever, and better information about what the weather will be doing, say, within the next 12 to 24 hours. So I think if you're concerned about the weather, there are places that you can go that are going to give you a pretty good idea what's going to be happening today and this afternoon and tomorrow. And then probably the other thing is that, you know, you should have a plan. Think about what you might do, where the safest place is to be, whether you're at home or you're out shopping or whatever, and just know that, okay, if something happens, you've thought about what you're going to do.
Yeah, and you know, we have coverage when the storms are coming through central Illinois and east central Illinois. We don't have continuing coverage for Indiana, but that gentleman might have a local station that does. On cable, the Weather Channel is usually updating information, for example. Unfortunately, there's really no hotline available that you can continually call, and the reason is when there's severe weather, all the meteorologists are working on tracking the weather, and it's really not a time to be able to just take phone calls.
Yeah.
Any phone calls that we get are usually just, we have to limit to just information on storm damage and where the storms are most severe at the time. And because it does get pretty busy in weather offices during severe weather.
Sure. Well, though, again, maybe then the thing to do is just go back to our earlier suggestion about people looking for a weather radio, the
mm-hmm.
weather alert radio.
Exactly.
Then that's a thing that you can have it if you want. You can carry it with you. You can, as you say, you can program it so that if you get the right kind, you can program it so that the alert will only go off if it's right in the area where you are. And if you're concerned that that'll go off, it'll say severe weather is threatening you, and then you can go with the plan that you put together.
And weather radios are available at many retailers. I know Radio Shack is one that's got a variety of weather radios, from the inexpensive on up to the same radios with mm-hmm. That technology.
Something else that we're coming down to a couple of minutes here, and if somebody wants to try to get in real quick, you can do that. 333-9455 and toll free 800-222-9455. One thing that we've talked about before and I know confuses people, at the risk of confusing them some more, I think it might be worth talking a little bit about the dew point.
Oh boy, here we go!
I know, but I know, but I, it's
you
one
do
of those
this at
things.
At the end of the show, and we don't have much time. But
okay, you mean 5 minutes isn't enough to talk about the dew point? Okay,
no, the dew point. Okay, just to put it simply, the dew point temperature is a parameter we give spring, summer, whenever the humidity levels start to get up. And the thing to remember is when the dew point temperature is 65 degrees or higher, that means we consider it humid. When it's over 70, it's very uncomfortable. So we don't talk much about the dew point in the winter because it's always equal to or less than the temperature. So when the temperature is cold, the dew point's low, and that means humidity is low. Mm-hmm. But the reason we give the dew point is the dew point actually changes with humidity or the amount of water vapor in the air. That percentage number that's given is the relative humidity, and even though some TV stations will call it the humidity, it's really the relative humidity, and that's also temperature dependent. So when the temperature is high, the relative humidity is typically lower, and when the temperature is low, the relative humidity is typically higher. So winter and summer, around sunrise, we often have relative humidities of 80 to 100%. But you know it's more humid in the summer than the winter.
Oh, yeah.
So that 80 to 100% doesn't really tell you the humidity. It just tells you how close the air is to saturation, meaning how close the humidity in the air is to the maximum amount that can be in the air at a given temperature. And, of course, that maximum changes with the temperature. Gets much higher as it gets warmer.
So the thing that people are going to maybe want to pay attention to, or that will give them some information, particularly is dew points in the summertime. If you want to know, okay, I'm going to go inside and is it going to be relatively comfortable, or is it going to be that sort of sticky stuff that, well, I don't like it. Maybe some people do. Is it going to be like that?
Yeah. In the summer when we give it more frequently, when the dew point's in the 50s or lower, it's pretty comfortable. When it gets to 65 or higher, it's humid. And when it gets in the 70s or on rare occasion, the low 80s, that's when it's awful.
Yeah. So. And I'm sure that if you get the really high dew points like that, you know that there's a lot of moisture in the atmosphere. So then if you have some cold air moving in on you, which you can see on the maps, then that's really, you're going to say, well, this is a recipe for thunderstorms.
Yep.
Because we've got warm, moist air. We've got cooler air, which is probably also drier. Those two things come together. You're going to have thunderstorms.
And drier air is more dense than moist air. Most people think it's reverse. But, yeah, it's cold, dry air is more dense and pushes up the warm, moist air.
Okay. Well, we got a couple of people here. We'll see if we can get them in. And first, Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello there. Could you discuss the Fujita scale and the strength of winds that are in each gradation of the scale for us?
Well, I can give you a rough guide to it. I actually did not bring in the exact numbers here. The Fujita scale was changed a little over a year ago. It's now the Enhanced Fujita scale, and it goes from 0 to 5, and 0 to 5 on the old scale and new scale are supposed to match up as in terms of the damage. So an old F4 tornado should equal an EF4, but the wind speeds at the higher end were reduced because scientists determined that the wind speeds at the higher end were being overestimated compared to the damage. And there's more care now being done with damage surveys to looking at the type of structure destroyed by a tornado or remain standing. Basically, an EF5, the highest is now wind speeds of over 200 miles per hour. It used to be 261 to 318. It's now just over 200 miles per hour. So in general, and this is just being rough, the EF0 and EF1, which we consider weak, have winds in general around 100 miles per hour or less. And when you get to the 2 or 3, what we call strong tornadoes, you're generally in that 100 to 200 mile per hour category. The higher end of that is an EF4, which is a violent tornado, and that's approximately in the 170 to 200 mile per hour range. And I apologize, I don't have the exact cutoffs of each level in front of me with the new wind speeds, but 0 and 1 are weak, 2 and 3 are strong, 4 and 5 are violent, and 1% of all tornadoes are violent. About 74% or so are weak, and 25% are in the strong category. So the majority of tornadoes are weak. Only 1% are violent.
A weak tornado, though, can still cause significant damage.
It can cause damage, but it's not going to knock down a sturdy house. It's just going to damage it.
Okay.
Whereas a violent tornado will wipe it out.
Let's get one more. Someone on the campus. Line two. Hello.
Hi. I just have three easy ones.
Okay.
First of all, the official weather statistics are taken at the Water Survey. Where exactly is that?
Second okay.
One is my father told me that the Weather Channel radars, unless there's severe weather going on actively, is usually on some kind of a delay that's on the order of 15 minutes. Is that true for, like, Channel 22 here? And the third one is, do you know of a good lightning detection website?
Okay. To answer all your questions quickly here, Illinois State Water Survey official statistics are taken near the corner of Windsor Road and First Street. That's where the water survey instruments are. As you go west of First Street on Windsor Road and look toward the north, you can see a bunch of instruments there, meteorological instruments. So that's where the official observations are taken. The radars, when you see a Midwestern composite or of the radar, oftentimes on the Weather Channel or elsewhere, there could be that they're only updated every 15 minutes. So that doesn't mean every image you see is delayed 15 minutes, but it could be up to 15 minutes.
Okay.
So yes, that's true. And as for our lightning website, unfortunately, I mean, you can do some searching to find some information, but the best resolution lightning data you still have to pay for. That's something that's not free, unfortunately. I don't have a good recommendation there, although I think that the access to lightning data may improve here over the next couple of years.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, that's about it. Any last thing you'd like to leave with folks while we go?
Well, just we'll try to keep providing good weather information here on WILL, so stay tuned to AM 580 or FM 90.9 HD2. Or, you know, at night, just FM 90.9 in general,
yeah.
And HD1 or HD. And we do cover a 19-county area for our severe weather coverage area. It includes most of central and east central Illinois. So basically from I-55 to the Indiana border and from Livingston Ford near Iroquois to the north to around Christian, Shelby, and Cumberland and Clark to the south. So We'll try to keep you updated, and hopefully we won't have to work too much late tonight and tomorrow.
All right.
And all day Ag Outlook meeting tomorrow. I'll be out there tomorrow talking about ag weather.
Ed Kieser, he's our chief meteorologist for WILL. Thanks very much.
My pleasure.
Do short-term and long-term, our guest will be Jennifer Thorne Amon. She's the lead author of The Consumer Guide to Home Energy Savings, Save Money, Save the Earth. The book is now in its 9th edition. She'll join us following the 1 o'clock news. Let's take a look at commodity prices now in Kansas City. May wheat, 573 1/4, down 3/4. March wheat in Chicago, 516 1/2, up 1/4. May, 524, down 3. March corn, 360, up 7 1/4. May, 367 3/4, up 6 1/4. July, 378, up 7. September, 387 1/4, up 8. And let me give you the March contract again because I was a little distracted. It is up 7 1/4 at 360. March soybeans, 887, up 8. May, 874 1/2, up 7 1/2. July, 871, up 5. March meal, 276.80, up 260. May oil, 31.41, up 38. At the Merck in Chicago, April live cattle, 83.